Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Small Talk, a show about small business for small business. Here's your host, Mark S. Lee.
Good morning and welcome to Small Talk with Mark S. Lee. Happy weekend here in the Motor City. As you know, this is your source for entrepreneurship across the great city of Detroit, the state of Michigan, as well as across the country, because the show does air nationally via radio.com. Dope. Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine. You watch those, I guess that thing called exhibition game again?
Yeah, that's why they call it exhibition.
That's why it's called exhibition.
Exactly.
But that's all right. We're just fastly, we're moving quickly through the month of August. And I'm going to say this every single week, as I've been saying through the summertime. Enjoy these long days. The days are getting shorter.
Yep.
And the average temperature is dropping quickly. So just enjoy the warm weather.
But not today.
But not today, because it's going to be near 90.
That's right.
I love it.
Yeah, I know you do.
You know I do. All right. We want you all to sit back and enjoy that nice hot cup of coffee. As I always like to say, this first segment is brought to you by Michigan.com. But before I get started, I do have to say, to give two very special shout outs from this past week. I made my national TV broadcast premiere debut this past week on PBS. Thank you to Family Pictures USA. I've done many radio commercials, many radio interviews across the country, but my first time being on national television, so thank you to Family Pictures USA. The response was overwhelming. They focus on Detroit. You can go to pbs.org and check out the Detroit segment, and it was a wonderful experience. And then right after the show this morning, I will be on American Wag Journal, still on PBS, on Channel 56. Thanks and a shout out to Stephen Henderson and the team over at Channel 56 were inviting me to come over and talk about issues affecting Detroit. All right, with all that said and done, let's jump right into it. We got two very special guests. I'd like to welcome Ms. Denise Graves, and she's the University Relations Director for Entrepreneurship and Innovation for the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, or MEDC, and she's, again, the University Relations Director. And also Mr. Eric Peterson, who's the Program Director for M-TRAC Innovation Hub for Advanced Transportation out of the University of Michigan. For all you fans out there, yes, go blue, and go ahead and say it anyway for your team, Doak.
Yeah, go green.
There you go. All right. All right, Denise and Eric, good morning. Thanks for joining me. How are you?
Good morning, Mark. Doing great. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for having us.
We are so pleased to have you. You've got some great news, that's been happening since the last time we chatted, Denise, and I know you've been on the show several times. So I want to start off very briefly. Tell us about the M-TRAC Advanced Transportation Program.
Sure. It's great to be here again, Mark. Thank you for the invitation. So today, as you mentioned, I brought Eric Peterson with me, the Commercialization Program Director for the M-TRAC Advanced Transportation Innovation Hub. And the Advanced Transportation Hub focuses on translating research into the commercial market, in particular and Eric can talk a little bit more specifics from project purposes, but it focuses on translating all the technology for the transportation sector out into the commercial market. So Eric oversees that program, the Oversight Committee, and the Advanced Transportation Hub at the University of Michigan is just one of five innovation hubs across the state. So we support all of the work that comes out of universities, hospital systems, and nonprofit research centers. And in addition to advanced transportation, we also have life sciences, advanced materials, ag bio, and a new one coming out from Wayne State, advanced computing.
So we got all the universities getting involved in this technology and certainly helping to get those businesses commercialized and things of that sort. So Eric, your role over at the University of Michigan, one more time, is the program director, is that right?
Yep, that's right.
And exactly what does that mean?
Well, so I work at the University of Michigan, but this program represents all the public universities in the state.
Okay.
So this is a transportation program, and we try to find the best research coming out of the universities in the state that can be applied to the transportation industry. So as you know, there's a big transition in the industry with electrification and all these robotic autonomous cars. And we try to basically apply the best knowledge and research from the university and get it into industry.
Yeah. And so when the researchers, what do the researchers receive when they're awarded? What exactly do they win? Mm-hmm. What do they get?
Right. A small amount of money to further their research, but also connections into industry and mentoring from experienced entrepreneurs. So basically, we try to understand how they would apply a certain technology into the market and basically help them out in doing that.
And Denise, we were chatting this past week, and I asked you a question. You just recently gave out some additional awards or grants, I believe, right? Recently? As part of the most recent program?
Yes.
Yeah.
Advanced Transportation. Correct. Those awards were in June.
Yeah. And how much was awarded, and on average, what was the average awardee recipient?
I believe the total was around $640,000, and for the Advanced Transportation Program, the average award is around $75,000 to $100,000, and that is, 50% of that is matched by the MADC program, and then 50% comes from a match from that institution. So whether it be, university, hospital system, or nonprofit research center, they bring matching funds with them as well.
And Eric, let's talk about that. You had seven projects recently receiving funding. These are projects led by University of Michigan. They range from ensuring autonomous vehicle traffic safety to enabling lightweight multi-material vehicle structures. And then on Michigan State, so we got to be fair in this state. At Michigan State University, researcher-led project proposed to reduce internal combustion engine fuel consumption through the use of a turbulent jet ignition system. Wow. What does that mean?
Well, this is a researcher named Professor Harold Schock, and he's been working for decades and trying to get basically better combustion in an internal combustion engine. Mm-hmm. And so the controls, kind of the computers that control engines, are advanced enough that he can apply his technology and make the engines more efficient. So there's a transition into electrification right now, but internal combustion engines will still be along for quite some time. And we think saving fuel is important, and we think that he'll be able to introduce this into the industry.
Okay, and then Denise, back over to you. I know you've had success metrics of M-Track, and you have some specific data through the month of June. Can you share that with us?
Absolutely. So as I mentioned earlier, Mark, we have five innovation hubs functioning across the state in support of M-Track. And M-Track's been around since about 2012 and since its inception. And we keep track of numbers since its inception because this is a very long bet, if you will. Mm-hmm. Bringing technologies to market is not for the faint of heart, and it takes a very long time, especially when you look at the life sciences, therapeutics, diagnostics, things of that nature. So since its inception, M-Track has... the oversight committees have seen 638 proposals. They have funded 295 projects, which have created 47 startups, 162 jobs.
Wow.
They've licensed 34 technologies to industry, and they've also did options to industry of around 30. And then the follow-on funding number has been almost $200 million. So the follow-on funding is additional grants or, financing through venture capital and those types of things. So... for a program as very early stage as M-Track, these numbers look great when you consider all of the work that goes into it.
And I think the good thing about that, ultimately, these will lead to increased investments and jobs as well in our state as we continue to redefine ourselves from that traditional manufacturing hub that we've always been known as, of course, into one, as you referenced, into technology, autonomous vehicles, and the life sciences. I mean, this is the future that our state is going right now. Eric, is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. Absolutely. One project from University of Michigan is from some software researchers, and they have a piece of software that when the autonomous vehicle software is changed, it can check to make sure that the changes still follow traffic rules and things like that. So,
sure.
Yeah, so it's pretty critical that we have safe robots driving us around, not dangerous robots.
Well, we're talking to Denise Graves, and she's the University Relations Director of Entrepreneurship and Innovation for MEDC, for our friends across the country. That's the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. And also Eric Peterson, he's the Program Director, M-Track Innovation Hub for Advanced Transportation. It's out of the University of Michigan. Let's talk briefly about the... let's talk briefly about the other programs that you offer. What are some of the other M-Track programs that are currently available?
So some of the other MTRAC programs that are currently available, Mark, are the Life Sciences Innovation Hub at the University of Michigan, and the Fast Forward Medical Innovation Team oversees that program. We have an Ag Bio MTRAC Innovation Hub out of Michigan State University, and we also have an Advanced Materials Innovation Hub out of Michigan Tech, which is up in Houghton. And then we are spinning out a new one out of Wayne State for advanced computing. So we feel that these five main industry focuses are going to help propel the technology that is being developed out of our universities into the commercial market.
You know, Denise, what I love is you and I had these conversations. We had a conversation previously. We know we're going in the fall pretty soon, and in football, starts next week.
Yes, it
does. College football starts the last weekend of August. I think Michigan State plays August the 30th, I believe, Doak.
And
the Big Blue plays August the 31st. They play Mississippi State, I believe. My point is, so we have the on-field rivalries.
That's right.
But we see the universities coming together to work together on projects like this.
That's a great point, Mark. And we've talked about this before. And, you know, one of the very unique things that we have here in Michigan, I've spent a lot of time talking to other states across the country, is how to get the universities to all come to the table and work, you know, for the good of getting their technologies out. And, you know, they compete on the football field or in the basketball court, or I'm a hockey mom, on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
But they really, truly come together, and Eric is witness to this as well, and roll up their shirt sleeves and sit around the table and collaborate, and even down to the faculty level. We have some faculty that are working on projects to bring through the MTRAC program. We have hospital systems collaborating with universities. So it's pretty phenomenal to be part of that type of an ecosystem where everybody is working together and making things happen.
Eric, I want to come back over to you. We have a couple of minutes remaining. Let's talk about the eligibility for the program. Who's eligible? How do you select these individuals to participate?
Right. Well, this has to be from universities. So when a researcher comes up, say, with a patent, then it's owned by the university. So that is the basic eligibility. And then they apply, and there's a group that makes the funding decisions that come from industry, other entrepreneurs.
So an oversight committee.
Yep, investors and university tech transfer people. And they make the best decisions based on the potential of the project. So is it solving a critical problem? Is that the only way to solve that problem? Is the technology very unique and kind of have long-term defensibility? And also, is the team convincingly motivated to work really, really hard, because entrepreneurship is not easy, the most successful ones are obsessed.
Yeah, and Denise, I do want to ask you. You said the average, I think, award or grant was $75,000. Typically, how do they, in closing a minute or so, how do they use those resources generally?
I mentioned some of these faculty members. This is their life work. They have been working on these technologies for a number of years. So, as a prerequisite for coming through the MTRAC program, it has to be focused on commercialization. Mm-hmm. So the milestones are created, and the oversight committee will support or add to or remove some of those milestones based on the laser focus of commercialization. So based on the research and the commercialization and making sure those milestones can be met within a 12-month period with the budget they support, that's how the project is set up.
Okay.
And then we have checkpoints. So we check on the milestones and the meeting of those milestones, and is there a redirect needed? So we kind of keep tabs on them going through that 12-month process as well.
Well, in closing, the website is?
Sure. To learn more about the MEDC Entrepreneurship and Innovation Initiative, your listeners can visit michiganbusiness.org/entrepreneurship.
Outstanding. Denise Graves and Eric Peterson, I want to thank you both for coming in and giving us the update on the MTRAC program, and much continued success. Every time I see you, got more news to share.
That's right. It's a great time to be in entrepreneurship in Michigan.
Outstanding.
Thank you, Mark. Have a great Sunday.
Thank you. Do the same. There'll be more guests after this commercial break on Small Talk with Mark Esley. And this segment, in fact, was brought to you by Michigan.com. Good morning. Welcome back to Small Talk with Mark Esley on this beautiful, warm Sunday morning in August. And it's hard to believe that we are in August, but you know what? Let's enjoy the day. Let's enjoy the week. It's going to be a great week for all of us involved. All right, I want to continue the conversation with a sharp young man. So Let me level set the conversation. Last week, we spent quite a bit of my time last week talking about the great city of Flint. And we were talking about entrepreneurship and some things that are happening in Flint. And I want to give a shout out to the Hub Detroit, one of my partners, and the Hub Flint. They did a wonderful recap story, and they took last week's interview and they shared it out across all social media. So, oh my goodness, I was overwhelmed by the response. So if you want to read it, go to the Hub Detroit or the Hub Flint. And this week, I want to continue the conversation about the great city of Flint with a young man who's a dynamo, and he's an entrepreneur, and he's from the great city of Flint, Michigan, and we're going to talk about what's happening when it comes to the water situation over there. With that as a backdrop, Mr. Jonathan Quarles is a serial entrepreneur, angel investor, and a global engagement expert. Jonathan, good morning. Thanks for joining me.
Good morning, Mark. Thanks for having me.
So, Flint, that's your hometown.
That's my hometown.
I know you love that city.
I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I saw that love last week when we did that interview with one of the organizations, and I didn't realize all the great things, a $250 million investment coming into the city of Flint. That's incredible.
Definitely.
And so I want to unpack what you're doing. I know that we've had you on Small Talk in the past, but you just launched a brand new initiative focused on the water situation in Flint. So let me back off and let you take over.
Sure. Yes, I'm really excited to talk about this new initiative. And I look at it as a movement. It's more than just a premier bottled water company. But we, Solaire is a company that I just launched. I'm actually doing a soft launch this afternoon in Flint. And it's water that's made out of the air, and it's 100% solar powered. So it's the only technology, the way that we're getting the water, that is self-sustainable.
How long, Jonathan, did it take for you, or some people say JQ, how long did it take for you to come up with this idea?
So actually,
how did you get started with it?
Sure. So about a year ago, we started doing community engagement work in Flint, specifically to kind of make sure that the citizens really wanted what we were proposing. We wanted to be very responsible and respectful just because of with all that was going on with the Flint water crisis. Earning trust was the number one priority. But the end of last year, I kind of had this idea of investing in a local entrepreneur in Flint to start something like this to bottle and distribute the water that we create out of air. And I couldn't find anyone that was interested, so I ended up doing it myself.
Really?
Yeah.
So doing the product yourself and the research, I mean, commercial, everything yourself.
Definitely. So I have a team. I have a really good team. So I just brought on a really strong operating manager who's very familiar with water, the business of water, as well as doing it from a startup standpoint. So essentially, this is a startup company, which I have a lot of experience with being an advisor and investing in startup companies. But this is actually something that I'm doing for the community.
Well, we're talking to Jonathan Quarles, and as I was reading about Solaire, it's a premium water harvested from sunlight and the fresh air in Flint, and it's designed to help fund life-changing water projects for the community. And so basically, this is almost like the perfect water, for the lack of a better phrase. There's no, technically no perfect water, but it's the closest thing to being the perfect water that there is.
And what I tell people, and that's correct, Mark, is that this is water that is not compromised by any underground infrastructure, lead. Our tubes that actually go directly from the hydro panels to the source of where in which we'll get our water are all plant-based tubes. And it's above ground. And like I said, it's not dependent on whether we have energy or not. We are getting natural sunlight. And so we're trying to change the game of how people think about water. Water is a huge issue. It's not just in Flint, but in Newark, all throughout the United States and the world. And so we want to make sure that we're leaders, and we're starting at the water capital of the world, Flint, Michigan.
Well, there were also issues, if people recall, at the beginning or halfway through the school year in Detroit.
Correct.
For the Detroit public school system. So it's not, you're right, it's not just Flint, it's other cities across the country and just a few miles southeast of Flint in the great city of Detroit. So what you're doing here is addressing a need that sometimes we just take for granted. And I think we forget about that.
Correct. And so it's one, the need, but then also what I'm really excited about is that a portion of everything that we make goes to this Flint Water Fund that's managed through the Community Foundation. So it's an independent fiduciary organization that will be responsible for whether helping people out with water bills who can't afford it, or just helping with infrastructure improvement.
So let's clarify one thing. There's been a lot of discussion in Flint about the pipes and, you know, the replacement of the pipes and things like that. So this product is not necessarily replacing all the water in Flint. This is another opportunity for people to access water. Is that right?
Yeah, this is just a drinking water solution.
Just a drinking water solution.
So you won't bathe and wash your hands in this. This is strictly drinking water.
How do people get it?
So there's several different ways. So we currently have a demonstration project in Burston Fieldhouse, which is one of the more dense recreational centers, and then also in the City Hall. So people can go today and actually taste the water, and it's free of charge thanks to the kind contributions of the Community Foundation in providing funding for it. But we'll be bottling this. We're working on another initiative where my goal is to be able to donate this water to Flint community schools, but we have to make sure we obviously build our business model to get to that point. So, you know, we're doing that, but we're also trying to change the model and have this being replicated so you can actually sub-license the Solaire brand and do that anywhere in the United States. And so that's another piece that I'm really excited about.
So you said you have a soft opening or a soft launch later today.
Yes.
I think you said 3 o'clock this afternoon.
At Burston Fieldhouse.
And what exactly is going to happen there this afternoon? Is it free to the public?
It is. So yeah. We're sponsoring a barbecue. And so it's for a community. So we are inviting everyone out to come out. There's an all-star softball game, which is really something that's huge in Flint on Sundays. So come on out, check out the softball game. We'll have water that we will be providing, and you can taste Solaire water, and then you also will receive, we're sponsoring, like I said, a barbecue, so you'll be able to have free food and just a good time for any, and to offer ourselves for any questions. While we will have panels on the ground there working, we can answer questions and, you know, and talk to both young and old about this technology.
So, you know, Doug, lately I've been engaging you when we're having this fascinating conversation,
right?
And there was something last week where we just looked at the two individuals, and they were doing some great things in Detroit.
Yeah,
I mean, again, here's another example. We have a young entrepreneur.
Exactly.
And I say young, and he's not as old as me, so anybody younger than me is younger. Hey, watch it.
Anybody's younger than me.
So. I know, that's right. But what do you mean? Again, here we go. We got an opportunity of a young man from Flint getting back into his city to address the water crisis.
That's awesome. I mean, yeah, that's a great, yeah. Kudos to this guy. He's doing well. Doing good.
You know, so when people taste the water, so I know, Doug, I mean, I don't know about you. I drink a lot of bottled water and I don't drink the water out of the faucets like we used to when we were growing up. You know, did you notice a difference between the water out of the faucet versus the bottled water?
I can't tell you the last time I drank out, you know, everything I do is a filter. I have a pitcher filtered at home. I have, I can't tell you the last time I drank out of a hose or anything like that.
Yeah, and one of the things that, you know, in doing my research and just really digging in, I'm not quite a water expert yet, but, you know, in just the studies and what I've been reading is, you know, we're going to be bottling all of our stuff in very renewable. So it's going to be paper cartons, it's going to be glass, and then it's going to be aluminum cans. We're not actually utilizing plastic just because a lot of the chemicals that goes into place. And so we really trying to be environmentally friendly. And while we're doing that, we also are educating the young people about recycling. We're educating them about the water technology because that's going to be a booming industry. And I really want to make sure that I play a leadership part in making sure that our young people are exposed to this industry that's going to take over the world.
And we're starting to see this too at restaurants. I don't know if you all, both of you probably know, I just discovered this recently, that the plastic straws are disappearing.
It is.
And people are now pulling together these recycled straws. I guess it's almost like cardboard.
It's like paper.
It's like paper. It's taking me a while to get used to that.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if it's for so long. Right. But it's interesting to see how people are becoming so much more environmentally friendly, eco-friendly. So it sounds like this bottled water, and again, we're talking to Jonathan Quarles. He's an entrepreneur. He's starting a business called Solaire. And Solaire is created straight from the air. It's purified through a process. It creates a water with the optimal taste, the mouthfeel, and certainly the affinity towards water. The bottom line is you get crisp, clean, pH-balanced drinking water. So when we talk about pH balance, for those who may not understand what that is, exactly what is that? Why is that beneficial to you?
The levels of acidity. So you want to have a certain level of pH for its purest form, and you know the body needs to be alkaline. And so we're close to alkaline and as far as like our pH balance. But one thing I also want to talk about too is that the technology is not just the hydro panels that we actually, the source of our water, but you can actually monitor. We have, you can, for those that are customers, you literally can have on your mobile device real-time information of the quality of the water. So you can see how much it produces. You can see what the pH balance at real-time. And so if there's ever any issue, the machine literally shuts down and then it goes into a troubleshoot mode. So you don't have, you know, this is what we're trying to do, and we can make water in the desert. I mean, the company actually, Zero Mass Water, which owns the patent on source, is based in Scottsdale, Arizona. And so it was created in the desert. So, you know, for places when Puerto Rico had the situation with the power outage, we were the first ones there providing, you know, access to clean water that's not compromised by any underground infrastructure. So,
all I have to say is, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I just have to say, wow, Doug. It's just like, we think about when Doug and I were coming up, we thought about entrepreneurship years ago. It was more in the manufacturing, the traditional base. Mm-hmm. And now to hear the technology and how technology is being leveraged to address these types of issues is phenomenal. So I guess the question is, when you went back, I'm interested to get the city's response, mm-hmm. the city of Flint's response. Yep. How did you sell the idea, I'm sure, to the mayor and to other key leaders in Flint, yep. so that they, I know they're replacing the pipes, mm-hmm. right? And of course, they're certainly for the high quality water. Yep. What was your pitch, your story in terms of getting it into and getting your buy into the city of Flint?
Yeah, so I definitely want to thank Mayor Weaver and Isaiah Oliver at the Community Foundation, who's the president and CEO. They played a huge leadership role. And one, we started off doing a listening tour. So before we even talked about what we're doing, we sat down and talked with community leaders, pastors, business people, philanthropists, educators, just to kind of to share with them what the technology was and then what was the concerns. And if we were to do something like this, how do you see us rolling this out to the community? So we spent at least 6 months doing that before we even started putting a panel in the ground. So that's the model that we want to reference across the globe. And so we want to make sure that people understand that this is not just about water and it's not about a business. This is about a social impact and doing it responsibly to the community that deserves it.
Yeah, we have less than a minute or so. So I just want to ask you quickly the website that people get more information. Sure. And also talk about the event again this afternoon, time and the location.
Yep. So we're on all our social platforms, Drink Solaire. At Drink Solaire. And then our website is www.drinksolaire.com. And this evening we'll have our soft launch, free food, our Solaire water. And that's 3 p.m. Burston Fieldhouse in Flint, Michigan.
And Solaire is S-O-L.
Yes.
A-I-R.
Yes.
Just want to clarify that. Jonathan Kors, we want to thank you for coming in, man. This is very impressive. You know, I've been tracking you for quite a while. You're doing some great things, and we just wish you much continued success.
Thank you.
And that's also because you're a good alpha man, too.
Oh, yeah.
All right. There'll be more guests at this commercial break on Small Talk with Mark Esley. If you're trying to figure out what the alpha man is, go Google it, figure it out, because it's Alpha Phi Alpha Fraternity Incorporated. We'll be right back.
That's right. 06.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning. Welcome back to Small Talk with Mark Esley. I hope you're sitting back and enjoying the conversation on this beautiful, hot summer day. And I know from some of our friends across the country, some of your kids have already gone back to school. And so we wish them a successful academic year upcoming here in the Motor City area. Kids will be going back to school right after Labor Day. And so we wish you all time to, we hope you have a wonderful time getting your kids ready for school. But I don't want to talk about school yet. How's that? All right. But I am. All right. As you know, I do my shout outs at this part of the show. And I'd like to give a shout out. Again, I want to start with a very special thank you to PBS, and I made my national TV debut this past Tuesday night across the country. Thank you to them for Family Pictures USA. If you want to see what I look like, go to familypicturesusa.org and definitely check it out. It was a wonderful time. I got a lot of great response to that. I also want to thank American Black Journal. Once I go off the air this morning, flip it over to channel 56. You can watch me, and I'll be talking about issues affecting Detroit. So I'll be on this morning from 9:30 to 10 on Channel 56. I also like to give a shout-out. You might be listening to us here in the Motor City on AM 1270. They give me this forum each and every single week to have this conversation with you. You might be sitting back and reading your free press or your local newspaper here in Detroit or your mobile technology. Just sit back and relax and enjoy the conversation. Or you might be listening to us across many of our .coms across the country, including WWJNewsRadio.com, EliteGroupInnovation.com, TheHubDetroit.com, SoundCloud.com, and Radio.com. That's a mouthful, but you might be sitting back in Chicago. Hello, Chicago. In New York. Hello, New York. Philadelphia, Los Angeles, Phoenix. Sit back and relax and enjoy your hot cup of coffee, your local newspaper, your mobile technology with our very special next guest, Ms. Ellen Lyle. And she's an entrepreneur, and she's doing some wonderful things in the eco space here in Detroit. And she owns a product, owns a business called the Pink Elephant Products and Events. And I'm going to let her explain that. Ellen, good morning. Thanks for joining me.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. Glad to have you.
So Pink Elephant Products and Events, L3C, is a social enterprise, a triple bottom line social enterprise, meaning that we focus on people, planet, and profits. So we offer eco-friendly laundry products, cleaning supplies, home care goods, cosmetics, and personal care, free of synthetic fragrance and hormone-disrupting chemicals. We also have a zero-waste event services program that we offer for your trade shows, your corporate picnics, that sort of thing, where we take composting, recycling, and food rescue.
So let's talk about this. Environmentally friendly, right?
Environmentally friendly. There's a focus on sustainability.
How did you come up with this business model? How did you begin to focus on this ecosystem environmentally friendly?
So initially, I was kind of looking holistically at all of the different things that can pollute indoor air inside the home. So your air fresheners, your and even beyond that, the flame retardants in pajamas and the, you know, the Scotch Guard in our carpets and that sort of thing, and the off-gassing of memory foam pillows that are made of polyurethane, all of these different kind of things. So that's where we started out. We started out with e-commerce. The new retail store opened up this past April in Detroit's historic North End. And then just, you know, going around the city, I just really, what really bothered me was the amount of recoverable waste being generated at public venues and public events. And I always got a little discouraged because I thought, well, little old me, how am I going to do anything about this? I don't have the deep pockets for this. How am I ever going to make an impact here? And I finally figured it out. So that's where we started with that second thing that we have going on in the company, the Zero Waste Event Services.
You know, and it's funny you say that, because as I'm thinking, as you're talking, Ellen, I'm remembering we have a lot of old wood in the city from like old structures, and some people have reclaimed that wood. And there's a young man, you might know Mark Wallace. You know Mark?
Yes.
Yeah, Mark, he's reclaimed. He's got his guitars that he's that he manufactures or produces out of reclaimed wood from our many structures from across the city.
Right.
And so what you're doing is, it's interesting here that you say we got a lot of wasted things that can be recycled here in Detroit.
Right.
Are you the only business like this in the city?
No, actually, there are organizations that are doing similar work in this space. I'm not quite sure I think what sets us apart is we are sort of a one-stop shop for all things sustainability. Mm-hmm. So we're not just offering direct-to-consumer products, but also business-to-business services, all under one roof. So I think it's not that there isn't anybody doing this work in the city. There are some really great organizations that are already in the space that have been doing this kind of work for years. Mm-hmm. But what we're offering is one place to get all this done. So, for example, not only do we offer the Zero Waste Event Services, we also have compost drop-off. So that's going to enable people who live in multifamily units, people who live in apartments, people who don't have a backyard, people who don't cook that much, they can still reduce their food waste. So we also offer finished compost pickup in partnership with our friends at Midtown Composting. Mm-hmm. And basically, when people walk in our store, they know that every single product they're seeing has been vetted by us. So they can trust that product. They can trust that our supply chain is clean. They can trust that these products are healthy. These products are non-toxic. We even do things like, for example, insect spray, drain cleaner, things that are typically pretty scary. So we have better alternatives in the store. But like I said, I think that whole everything in one place, cleaning supplies, cosmetics, and I'm really proud to say that in our store we're actually offering affordable, healthy, organic food choices to the North End.
Have you always been an entrepreneur, essentially? I mean, what's your background? How did you get to this point, your career?
It's been a long and winding road, to put it mildly. So I actually have a background as a science teacher. And then for the last little more than a decade, I was actually at home with my kids. I have three boys. They're 9, 11, and 14 now.
Oh, they're driving you crazy. I'm running all over the place, aren't they?
So I'm busy. So the business is about 3 years old. Mm-hmm. And essentially what kind of brought me on this journey was not only my concern about what was happening at events and my concern about things in the home that can, and in our businesses that can negatively impact human health. I also thought about my own identity and what was happening to my identity and who I was before I had children, that sort of thing. So that kind of drove me to kind of tie those two, marry those two things together, looking to go back to who I, you know, that part of me, and also focus on sustainability.
We are talking to Ellen Lyle, and she's the executive director and founder for the Pink Elephant Products and Events. And we're talking really about what's happening, you know, in the eco-friendly space. And she offers eco-friendly, just synthetic, fragrance-free cleaning supplies and home care products, personal care, and cosmetics to both on the business side and directly to the consumer. Do you find consumers in 2019? Becoming much more in tune with this eco-friendly lifestyle, the environmental. So, for example, in a previous segment, we had on Jonathan Quarles, and he was talking about the water situation in Flint and what's happening there. He's going to be offering water that's directly from air and clearly much more eco-friendly. Do you find consumers becoming that much more acceptable?
Oh, most definitely.
Or is it still got a pushback?
Yes. I mean, I'd have to answer yes to both your questions, actually. While I do think that questions of sustainability and wanting to do things in a more eco-friendly way, while I do think that's become far more mainstream than even 10, 15 years ago, I also think that there's a lot of unfortunate confusion as to what does that even mean?
Yeah,
what does the concept of sustainability mean? Is this really green? There's a lot of greenwashing out there. So consumers want to do the right thing, but often they're just not quite sure what that is. So that's another thing that I'd like to believe that we can help with is that, again, when you walk in the store, we have a lot of knowledge. We can explain why this choice might be a little better than that choice. So that's kind of part of what we offer is trying to cut back a little bit on that confusion.
And I think that some customers or consumers, Ellen, they say, well, is my recycled bin going to make a big difference in the overall scheme of things?
Right.
Because, you know, we think about tons and tons and tons.
Right.
I mean, Detroit, we got 5 million people in this metropolitan area, 700,000 people in the city, whatever the number is. And you think about all the compost and all the trash, and that one person's thinking, well, do I really want to, you know, take my newspaper and recycle it and all this other stuff? And, I went to a restaurant recently, and Doak and I were just talking in the previous segment about the straws and how they're going from the plastic straws to, like, those cardboard straws. And,
right.
And I always wonder whether people's resistance really – what their perception or acceptance of that really is at this point.
Right. Then those are some very good points that you raise. I think when we think about things on an individual scale, it can really feel like it doesn't really make much of a difference.
Yeah.
But if you think about the straws and then you think, what's the big deal? If you multiply that by over 300 million people, you know, 7 billion, 8 billion people on the planet, then you can see where the scale starts to really become obvious. Now, of course, the recycling issue, that's another point of contention where there's a lot of confusion about what's going on. Does recycling still matter? And we have a blog, which is www.thepinkelephantspeaks.com, mm-hmm. where we address all of those issues. Like, for example, we have a blog entry about is zero waste elitist? Because that's that's another issue that I think is important to talk about. Does recycling still matter? How do we reduce food waste? So we address those things, those concerns that people have. And yes, there has definitely been pushback because it can be seen as that, why are we worrying about the straw when there's so many other pressing recyclability issues that we need to be worried about? You know, we've seen companies where they do away with the straw and then they replace the straw with a lid that is usually even more plastic than the straw. So
if people want to, we have a couple minutes remaining or so, talk to us briefly about drop-off points. Can they come down to your location and they drop off? Or do you pick up things? What's the process here?
So for consumers, there's a couple options. You can drop off your compost to our store. It's $2 for up to 3 gallons of compost because there is that fee to get that compost processed. They can also pick up finished compost for their gardens or their houseplants. We have the 5-gallon buckets available. For the weekly service, if someone finds that they have more compost on a consistent basis, food scraps and what have you. So Midtown Composting, our partner, actually offers weekly pickup of compost from the home. And a lot of people are just not aware that that's even an option because, like many states, we really don't have a strong organic. When we say organic, we mean food and what have you. We don't have a strong organic waste pickup structure with municipalities. So this service is really needed in the community, and it does exist.
That's outstanding. And I got to ask you briefly, how did you come up with the name, the Pink Elephant?
You know, elephants, as far as a species, are amazing. They have a matriarchal social structure. They're very strong social bonds. So that was part of it. And it just kind of fit together. Green's kind of overplayed. I was like, well, we could be the green elephant, but green is so overused, so we're just going to go with pink.
And in closing, give us the location of your offices and anything else you have, including the website.
Sure. So we are located in Detroit's historic North End at 9413 John R. And you can visit us on the web at www.pinkelephantproducts.com, so you can shop online. We also have an app, which is available on Google and iPad and what have you. So you can actually shop from the app and pick up your order in the store.
Ellen Lyle, we want to thank you very much from the Pink Elephant. She is the executive director and founder, and she's with the Pink Elephant Products and Events. Thank you very much for coming in and sharing the information.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having
me. Absolutely, my pleasure. There'll be more guests after this commercial break on Small Talk with Marcus Lee. And this segment, in fact, was brought to you by Michigan.com. Welcome back to Small Talk with Marcus Lee. I hope you're sitting back and enjoying a nice hot cup of coffee. As I always like to say, as you know, this is your source for entrepreneurship. And today's show has really, we have crossed the gamut in terms of what's happening here. We started out with MEDC and their M-TRAC program, and we came back and talked about what's happening in the great city of Flint. And then we also focused on an organization that is focused on eco-friendly products and services. And we're going to come back now and talk about a very important issue, and that is as it relates to equity and inclusion when it comes to business opportunities here in the great city of Detroit. So I have two very special guests. I'd like to welcome Mr. Darwin Parks, and he's the executive director of the Detroit Coalition for Economic Inclusion, and also Jason Cole. He's the executive director for the Michigan Minority Contractors Association. Darwin and Jason, good morning. Thanks for joining me.
Good morning.
Good.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks for joining us. And let's just jump right into it. You recently, the Detroit Coalition for Economic Inclusion was recently launched, right?
Correct.
And you got a lot of media coverage over the last several days. Someone take the lead and talk to us exactly what is it.
Darwin? Okay. What we've done is we put together a group that we brought engineers, architects, contractors all together and business owners and said, we need to come together as black businesses because of the economic boom that you see here in Detroit as far as development. Blacks aren't included in that process. So we brought a group together and said, we need to make sure that we're on the agenda. And we want to be a positive impact on changing the culture of inclusion in the industry, as well as all industries as it relates to construction, design, and businesses in general.
How many businesses are represented by this coalition?
Over 400.
Over 400.
Yep.
And do you have any statistical data that would suggest that African-American businesses are behind the eight ball when it comes to the boom that's taking place in Detroit?
Yeah, absolutely. What we're going to be coming out with what we're going to call an indicator study that basically gives a pulse of how black businesses feel they're participated. But we're also working with organizations like the CREO, which is a civil rights and inclusion, to pull together data of where they've gotten as far as performance of businesses and how these developments have been impacted. So we're working with them and city council and people like that to collect that data. And eventually we're partnered with the National Business League in order, we're going to be tracking this as well in the future.
Okay, Jason, and you're the you also have, you're president, executive director of the Michigan Minority Contractors Association, right?
Executive director.
I'm sorry, executive director, my bad. Executive director, I stand corrected. So talk to us about that organization and some of the challenges that you're, in the spirit of this conversation, what are some of the challenges that you're experiencing?
Biggest challenge is access to bonding and lines of credit. To be in construction, you need to front payroll for material and labor. And that's probably the biggest challenge that I work on. And we do have some remedies to that, but it's an ongoing battle. And then access to the opportunities, because we know they're happening. We can see them. We drive past them, but we're not necessarily always allowed in the room because systemic racism is a real problem. So,
but some would argue, though, that, you know, with all the construction boom that took place, like with Ford Field and, mm-hmm. and Little Caesars Arena and the other projects that are taking place. I know, for example, Chrysler they put the first beam in the ground this past Tuesday mm-hmm. on the east side of town.
Yep.
But one would argue, well, wait a minute, you know, some minority businesses have been involved in those processes or in those projects, but they did it through the form of building partnerships with majority-owned firms. How would you respond to that?
Everyone's still paying fines.
Okay, I've had directors yeah. on this show.
Yeah.
I've had directors, other people on the show who have established relationships with majority-owned mm-hmm. firms,
right.
And I'm not getting into all the politics and the understandings. I guess my question is how do people get around that when they find out there's a major project that's taking place? Their strategy was to partner with a majority-owned business or a contractor and establish a partnership or a relationship with them.
And we encourage that, mm-hmm. But it happens a little bit. But when you look at Detroit and the demographics of Detroit, you have an 80% black population, and we're only participating in 10% of what's out there. So that's where we say we want to come together with the large corporations mm-hmm. and organizations and help to change the culture of the how they do the process. I mean, if we have inclusion as a group, as a community, then we all gain benefit from that. So we're trying to say that corporate culture has to change, and we want to be part of that. We want to be in the rooms when you're talking about the developments versus when you're putting them out, because that's where you get in and you actually create a positive culture that can make an impact and truly get inclusion for all parties in the community.
But skeptics would also say, mm-hmm. it's not Mark Lee, I'm just saying, just want to provide both sides of the table here.
Yep.
Well, okay, if the city is 80% African-American and yet getting 10% of the contracts or the business opportunities, mm-hmm. one would say, well, are all the businesses out there ready mm-hmm. to play in the, quote, big leagues, right, as part of major projects and development efforts that are taking place? Mm-hmm. Are more than 10% of the contractors ready to take on more business?
Absolutely, because you not only have to look at just construction,
mm-hmm.
and that's what we represent all businesses. You have accounting firms that are big. You have engineering firms that can do this capability. So, and you have to look at the industry as a whole and all of the opportunities. And that's what's happened far too much is people focus on construction. Mm-hmm. That's only a small piece. And you have services that can be provided. You have cleaning services. You have all of these businesses, black businesses that are out here that are capable and have the ability to execute. And that's where you have to do, and that's where you have to change the culture and the paradigm. Same thing that GM went through years ago, the paradigm shift going from how we had to be competitive. So we say if you have inclusion of everybody, then we can all be more competitive.
We are talking to Darwin Parks. He's the executive Executive Director for the Detroit Coalition of Economic Inclusion, and also Jason Cole. He's the Executive Director for the Michigan Minority Contractors Association. Jason, back over to you. When you hear what Darwin is saying, and he's put a couple of solutions on the table, certainly getting to the table. If you had an audience with, let's just say, the big players downtown, mm-hmm. right, on the majority side, white-owned, Caucasian-owned businesses, yep. and they gave you 15 minutes to say, what do you want from us? What would you say to them?
True and meaningful inclusion. Let's have real conversation, and then go through kind of point by point. Who do we have that could match up for that particular project? And that normally does not happen. There are outreach sessions, and you know it'll be 1,000 people mm-hmm. in the room. Mm-hmm. But as to real conversation across the table, where are you at? Where this project is? How can we match up? That doesn't necessarily happen all the time.
And then your comeback would be, but we do offer the RFPs. We offer businesses mm-hmm. a chance to Correct. To submit, you know, to a, yep. a respond to an RFP. Correct. And then, so what's the response to that?
So if you look at the potential, most RFPs have a bonding requirements, mm-hmm. and you're looking at a substantial front outlay to getting that project. And so as going back to bonding and line of credit, that's our biggest challenge, and I work on that on a daily basis.
And to our listeners who may not be familiar with bonding, exactly yeah. what is bonding?
Right. So a bond is a guarantee of your ability to perform. And so you have to pay, it's normally $6 per thousand, mm-hmm. right? And that can be substantial if you're talking a $250 million project.
Yeah.
Even if you're just getting a $5 million piece to that. So that's been a Herculean task getting that resolved.
You know, Darwin, I'll come back over to you, and my listeners know, and I've given many speeches across the city of Detroit and across the country. I've written about it in my articles at Cranes, and I just wrote a story this past week in Detroit News about what's happening over in Livermore. You can pull it up if you want to read my article. Mm-hmm. And I always say this, and I've repeated this 1,000 times. We have 62,000 small businesses in the city of Detroit, from downtown to 8 miles, according to the U.S. Census data in 2012. And I'm talking about the city, not the suburban areas. Probably 49 or 50,000 are minority owned in that range. I could be off by a couple thousand. That's a point. My point is, this is a major city. We're the fourth largest city in the country when it comes to entrepreneurship. And many of those businesses, to your point, want to have the opportunity, whether or not they're a contractor, whether or not they're an entrepreneur, whether or not X, Y, and Z, but they want to have an opportunity to contribute and somehow take advantage or be engaged or included mm-hmm. in this economic expansion that's taking place in Detroit.
Yeah, and that's where we encourage, and we're trying to encourage businesses to join us in this effort, because we all have to participate and we all have to create these opportunities. And we're trying to mobilize these organizations and companies and people in order to get in front of it and have the opportunity. I mean, I'm passionate about this. I left General Motors 20 years ago. I'm from the city, was born in the city.
West Side.
And so I left in order to help black businesses.
Okay.
That's why I left General Motors, to bring my expertise of how to organize and how to execute projects and things. So that's my passion in the city. I've been here, been committed to this. Me and Jason started the organization, Michigan Minority Contract Association. We've been working on this for the last 15 years. So, you know, that's my main goal. And also, we're putting together a list of we're going to call it the exclusion list of businesses or projects that have happened that have minimal participation. And that, we're just going to pull the data. And that's all we're doing. Because, again, as you say, the naysayer is going to say, well, we do this. Well, let's look at the data. So we're going to present that data, and we're going to say, how do we move forward?
Okay, we have a couple minutes remaining. So let's talk briefly about the data. From what I understand, Jason, there's a study that's going on, a survey.
That's correct.
Has it been sent out? Have you got the results back? Or?
Yeah, so the survey started 60 days ago, and we will have a formal rolling out at our event. That'll be August 19th from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Over at 1048 Woodward Avenue.
So that's actually tomorrow, August the 19th.
Monday.
It's tomorrow, the 19th. So they're going to be rolling off the data points tomorrow. So that's going to be interesting. And I'll come back to you, Darwin, for some comments. What are you hoping that this survey is going to? What are you guys asking for in a survey? What are you surveying? Well, and it's translated quickly to solutions.
Okay, it's just an indicator of the feeling of the top 100 executive black businesses. And what we're doing is just getting how they feel that they're being included. And then we're going to put together a strategy of how we're going to work together to make a change that paradigm and make that economic inclusion. So we're meeting with companies coming up to try and help them to change the culture and the paradigm in their organizations to be more inclusive.
When the news broke that this coalition was coming together, what's been the overall response from the community at large?
It's been over needed. I mean, it's okay. Been needed. It's been something we've been working on, and they're glad to see it happening.
And in closing, very quickly, the results will be shared tomorrow. One more time, where?
It's going to be at 1048 Woodward Avenue, the CompuWare building.
Okay. And is there a website for the coalition?
Well, not yet, but we have Michigan Minority Contractors website, which is www.michmca.org.
Okay, Darwin Parks and Jason Call, I want to thank you both for coming in and talking about this critical conversation that we all need to have. Make it a great day.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mark.
Absolutely. Don't go out and make it a great day.
You do the same.
All right, man. I'm going to sit back and chill out and enjoy this hot weather. Try to hit the golf course today.
Exactly.
All right. We will check you all next week on Small Talk with Mark Eskley. Go out and make it a great day, make it a great week, and we will talk to you soon.